The Full Will Chase experience. I love it.
The following is a production by Cutting to the Chase podcast. Art of Ocal, part of NHL and ESPN in the crease, game broadcasts, various features. How you doing? Thanks much for taking the time.
Yeah, Will, thanks for inviting me. I'm doing great. It's summertime, off season, so taking some much needed time off, but you know, also still making the trip down to Bristol here and there. So things are good. How about you?
I'm doing well. I was just about to ask you, I know you were busy with the Stanley Cup playoffs, various other things going on, I'm sure. And I was going to ask you if you were able to get away and take some time off over the last few weeks or so.
Yeah, we took the family to Disney World. Nice. The kids are in their Disney Princess era. So we're doing that a lot, which is a lot of fun. Actually, honestly, it's pretty great being at Disney. I'm very much a Disney adult, so I'm happy to go. And you don't have, you know, you can twist my rubber arm to go to Disney. So it is a lot of fun. The kids had a blast, which is the most important thing. So, yeah. But I will also say that, like, when you go to Disney, it's fun. And, yeah, it's labeled as a vacation. But really, I was talking about this with a coworker, actually. It's like, if you have young kids, it's more trip and less vacation, you know? It's more like, oh, we took the kids geographically somewhere different, but I don't know by the end of it if my wife and I felt like we had a vacation. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I definitely do. I mean, I'm not a dad or anything, at least not yet, but I can totally understand where you're coming from there. I was at Disney World years ago. I was probably 10, 11. So I don't have your kids. I don't think your kids are quite that old yet, but
no.
So I can only imagine how young, you know, what it's like being at Disney. But hey, you're away. You're with the family. I'm sure it was still a great time, even if it was maybe chaotic or so.
Of course, absolutely. It's always a blast.
Awesome. So, you're back in. Is it Toronto now? Is that where you?
No. We live. I live about an hour and a half from Bristol.
Gotcha.
Connecticut. Yeah.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. Obviously, being with ESPN and everything. I was also gonna ask you, what is a general summer like? You know, for you, as to whether there's any real off season, or are you just kind of taking time off, but also trying to prepare for whatever hockey-related content, the season ahead, anything else that you've got going on, or what's the summers like for you typically?
So a lot of SportsCenter. So I'll be back in the mix anchoring SportsCenter. In the last couple of weeks, I've done the 11 o'clock SportsCenter, the 7 a.m. SportsCenter, the 10 a.m. SportsCenter, SportsCenter on Disney+. So a lot of that, like just being in the mix, generally hosting SportsCenter. And we still do our weekly UFC show. UFC doesn't have an off season, so we do that show every single week. That show airs internationally and also on digital. It's called UFC Fight Camp. It's with Megan Anderson, who's a former UFC title challenger. And yeah, so that goes all year round. And hockey-wise, obviously, we're taking a break. We're not as, you know, like the department gets to take a break. But obviously, we just saw the schedule release, so there's still, you know, there's still people working and announcing all of that and putting all of that together. So, you know, so people have varying staggered vacations, so to speak, but more so like for someone like me, I'll be in the mix elsewhere. And then come say September, October, we're really starting to hit the ground running, trying to think of what content to make and previews and season, etc. So I'd say that that would basically be what my summer looks like.
Yeah, it makes sense. I knew you were covering a lot of different sports. Like you said, SportsCenter, different things going on. So you're keeping busy for sure. And definitely wanted to, of course, chat some hockey playoffs, which just happened, or you know, what we just saw end last month, of course, with the Stanley Cup final. So basically, of course, the Florida Panthers repeat as champs. They've been to three straight finals. The state of Florida is the state of hockey right now. I know they weren't necessarily your pick to win it all. However, are you surprised that we're here with this basically new budding dynasty with the Florida Panthers right now?
Not really. I mean, I think that they built the team very, very well. They picked up pieces at the trade deadline. Like Brad Marchand is one of the greatest trade deadline pickups ever, right? Like he and the fact that, you know, like a lot of that team is going to run it back. A lot of that team is going to stay. It's like, I saw a tweet online. It's not the core four like the Leafs used to have. It's like a core 10 that's going to stay with them for the next, what, several years, right? And that just speaks to the... We've heard Paul Maurice talk about it at length about how he's never really seen that sort of vibe among players in a locker room like that before. And that just goes to show you how special it is what's happening down in Sunrise. And it was capped off by a Stanley Cup, and they were clearly the better team throughout the playoffs, and they just got the job done. They know how to win from last season, and they applied that to this year, and their best players were performing well, and they got amazing contributions from players like Brad Marchand and that third line with Lundell and Luo Storinen. And they honestly, like, that's what you need in order to win Stanley Cups, is your depth performing and contributing, and that's what they got.
Yeah, you said it. I mean, Florida, I was doing the NHL.com, you know, like Stanley Cup bracket going into the playoffs, and I thought I could see Florida winning. I took Tampa Bay in that series for some reason. I thought they're still really good. I think Florida was kind of not struggling that much going into the playoffs, but they weren't playing great necessarily at that time, at least up to their standard. And of course, like you said, they turned it on when it mattered. And Brad Marchand was, you know, insane. Almost could have been the Conn Smythe winner. I guess, like, what are you surprised by more? The way the Panthers kind of turned the tables on the Maple Leafs, or that we had a Stanley Cup rematch from 2024 and that it was Florida once again conquering Connor McDavid and the Oilers? I mean, I think a lot of people thought this might be Edmonton's year finally, but as you were just saying, we saw Florida turn it on really when it mattered again.
Yeah, honestly, they found a way to do it quicker too. Like, they just... Yeah, I wonder about the Oilers, the depth, the goaltending. I wonder how many questions. I mean, obviously they've had some personnel leave now, so I wonder what their team is going to look like at the start of the season, or you know, different pieces. I wonder how that series would have been if Zach Hyman was healthy. I wonder, you know, I mean, obviously it's hockey, right? Of course there's going to be injuries. Of course there's going to be what if questions, and Zach Hyman is certainly one of them, but. Still, the Panthers were the better team. They had the better depth. They were able to neutralize McDavid and Draisaitl in many situations, and their goaltending was better. So, you know, how many of those questions will the Oilers ask and answer in the offseason? To me, it's an absolute travesty that Connor McDavid could go his entire career not winning a Stanley Cup. That's a twofold point, though. It speaks to the parity of the league, and speaks to how even one superstar, no matter how good he is, like, you could argue that Connor McDavid is the greatest athlete on the planet. He's among them, and he's probably the greatest athlete in the top four major sports in America today, playing today. If you definitely look at the gap between his skill level and the next best player, it's a pretty seismic gap. So... But that speaks to the idea that one superstar can't carry your team. And we've seen him carry games and even series in the playoffs, but ultimately you need a whole team around you, and that's what McDavid needs. Not even Draisaitl's not enough.
I was just about to say, I know, like, obviously, like you said, Connor McDavid is the greatest player in the game right now, one of the best in all the sports. And I was talking with Scott Wheeler a couple of years ago, and I was trying to kind of gauge this question with him. I was like, I know Connor McDavid is what he is, and he's only gotten better even since then, if that's even possible. But talking about Leon Draisaitl, two superstars on the same team, but if you were to take or try to, I guess if you were to separate those two, how much of a drop off? I mean, you kind of just said it, but how much of a drop off? If you take Connor McDavid off the Oilers, is Draisaitl able to still be what he is, or is McDavid just elevating that game out of him even that much more?
Well, it's crazy when their power play was so incredible a few years ago, but like those two together can be absolute dynamite. But then again, there have been situations where the Oilers go down by two or three goals, then they put Leon and Connor together, and they try to get the team out of the hole, and sometimes it doesn't happen. And, you know, like, I would think that Connor McDavid would remain an Oiler for his career. I know that there's a lot of conversation about what if he goes to New York? What if, you know, obviously every team in the league would want a Connor McDavid, but I really wonder if he remains with the Oilers for his career, especially if he ends up winning a Stanley Cup in the next couple seasons, because that might motivate him to stay and motivate him to continue to win in Edmonton, where he spent his entire career. Like, right now, Connor McDavid is absolutely the best player in NHL history to not win a Stanley Cup. I think we put him in the Mount Rushmore conversation if he wins a Stanley Cup and if he gets to 2,000 career points, which he's absolutely going to be the next player to do that if all things stay the same. If he stays on the same point trajectory, if he stays healthy, by his mid-30s, he's going to have 2,000 points in the NHL. Crosby probably won't get there. There's nobody else that's going to get there in his generation. It's going to be Connor McDavid. And I believe that if he gets to 2,000 career points and if he wins a Stanley Cup, you start talking about which player do you take off the Mount Rushmore and put McDavid on instead, because that's how good he is.
Who would be on your Mount Rushmore right now?
Gretzky will forever be there.
Yeah.
I mean, the popular is Gretzky, Lemieux, Bork, and Gordie Howe, right? So
yeah.
Who do you take off of that list? Do you take off... Or it would be tough to take off. Mm-hmm. You have the debate about Lemieux versus McDavid. Lemieux was just... Lemieux might be the greatest, most talented player forward, certainly. Mm-hmm. Like, he, if not for injuries, he could have broken some of Gretzky's untouchable records, right? Like, you felt like he could break the... What was Gretzky's point record? 220, 216? Like, you felt like he could get there. There were some seasons where he was on pace and injuries plagued him, right?
Yep.
Like, it was he was unbelievable. Is it Gordie Howe? Like, Gordie Howe has historical significance and his longevity and, you know, his impact in the game. Bobby Orr was very much like Gretzky, right? Where he transformed the game. He transformed the position, right? And we haven't even put a goaltender in there. But with that said, Connor McDavid is that good.
Yeah.
Like, the thing he's missing right now are those... People will always deduct points from any player that doesn't win the championship. That's just human nature. That's always going to happen in sports. If you don't win a championship in your sport, even if you're the greatest player, you're never going to be considered the greatest player. That is just fact. So Connor McDavid, for people to put him in that conversation, has to win a championship. Stanley Cup.
If you had a guess, I mean, you were just kind of talking about it, obviously, but with McDavid, you know, when that time comes, do you think he ends up, like, if you had a guess right now, in your heart of hearts, do you think he stays in Edmonton long term, or?
Yeah, I think so. I honestly do. I wonder if he has another frustrating playoff run where maybe he feels like the team didn't do enough to put pieces around him. Maybe they run it back. In areas where he's like, I needed some more support here. I wanted to see more. If he's frustrated behind closed doors and we're not privy to that, and, you know, maybe that in that situation, he'd be like, I don't want to be here anymore. But, you know, all signs point to him being happy there. All signs point to him wanting to stay there. Leon Draisaitl's put pen to paper long term. So, you know, like, I don't know. If I were in Connor McDavid's shoes and Leon Draisaitl committed long term and we got so close, we were back to back cup finals, we lost 2 years ago by one goal in game 7 after almost pulling off a reverse sweep, all of this stuff would be in my head and it would probably motivate me more to want to win a Stanley Cup with this team because we feel how close it is and we believe in the team, you know? So from that angle, I'd probably say he stays for his whole career. But listen, Gretzky got traded, so you never know.
That's true. The reverse sweep, how crazy was that final 2 years ago? Just insane the way Florida was up 3-0, and all of a sudden, here comes the Oilers. That was crazy, wasn't it?
Unbelievable. It would have been monumental. It would have been legendary. But listen, it was one goal. It was 2-1, game 7. That's it. Just one goal, one simple goal. And that's like the, you know, the agony and the triumph of sports and hockey, which is why we love it so much. But it's impressive that the Panthers were able to defeat them in 6 in the way that they did.
Yeah.
It just speaks to the depth and the chemistry that team has.
What was your biggest takeaway from the 2025 Stanley Cup playoffs? Just, you know, playoffs in general, just from everything that you kind of saw unfold and play out the way it did.
I thought it was an entertaining playoff. Obviously, the finals, the big takeaway that they were able to run it back like that, and makes you wonder how far they'll be able to take it. The depth of the Panthers, and we just talked about that, but Brad Marchand's probably one of the biggest stories to me. Sam Bennett and how many goals he was able to score on the road. That was extremely impressive. But just what was coming out of that camp on and off the ice was pretty remarkable. So I would say that. And I was entertained by this postseason. I thought that there were a lot of great matchups. The Mikko Rantanen game 7 against his former team, hat trick in the third period. Like, are you kidding me? That's one of the best single game, single period performances we've ever seen in the playoffs. Like, that's just, like, that's Rantanen mode. That's Moose mode, you know? Like, that's unbelievable what he was able to do there in a game 7, by the way. Like, that's unreal. So, that's what jumps to mind right now anyway.
I'm just thinking back through the playoffs now. It's obviously hard to, you know, you think about Florida and Edmonton, as we've been talking about for a few minutes. But yeah, you know, I'm thinking back to like Connor Hellebuyck and the Jets, that Blues series. And, you know, Connor Hellebuyck was, you know, is the MVP of the league. He wins the Vezina. But the questions loom about the playoffs and the Demons in that sense. And are you surprised how that's kind of been his, like, I guess his bugaboo is the playoffs? And, you know, it's like he's so dominant, so great in the regular season, but once the playoffs start, it's kind of like he's kind of battling himself a little bit. Or, you know, it's even if he feels confident, it's hard not to, you know, think about that you know, that looming pressure and what everybody is saying and trying to tune out all that noise.
Yeah, and I mean, look, unless you've played in the Stanley Cup playoff, you never really understand that pressure. But there's clear statistical evidence that something is happening with Connor Hellebuyck in the postseason versus the regular season. He's been the best regular season goalie in the NHL last several seasons, as evidenced by his hardware. But then you get to the postseason, and you know that it just doesn't stack up, doesn't add up. So I don't know. It's a tough situation for the Jets, because how do you get away from a goaltender like that, right? Like, but then again, people were saying that about Sergei Bobrovsky once upon a time.
That's true.
Right? And now they're definitely changed their tune. Like, that's a 180 for Bob, right?
Yeah,
One's saying that about Bobrovsky. Like, that. Here's the thing. I believe this to be true. Okay, Will? I believe this to be true. Connor Hellebuyck could have an average postseason, but if the Winnipeg Jets win the Stanley Cup, the narrative will be gone. It doesn't matter. He could have a 905 save percentage and just be fine, be okay. Not amazing, not absolute garbage, just fine. He could have that. He can have one postseason where he's fine, but if the Jets win the cup, the narrative about Connor Hellebuyck will change completely, simply because he was the starting goalie when that team won the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
I firmly believe this.
Oh,
he's one run away. He's just one run away from being an all-time goaltender, and the previous 3 or 4 seasons or however long it's been will be completely forgiven, and it'll be a wash, and no one's going to talk about it anymore. All they'll talk about is, wow, he's won a bunch of Vezinas and he's amazing in the regular season, and then he finally got over the hump. Remember, like, Alex Ovechkin went through the same thing. Remember when people were writing about Alex Ovechkin, maybe he should go back to the KHL before he won the Stanley Cup in 2018? Like, really? Like, how do you look back on that now, like 10 years later, right? Or that was over 10 years, or maybe 15 years ago that people were writing that. But how do you look back on that now? It seems a little foolish, doesn't it? Right? But like, it's hindsight being 2020, right?
Yeah, so. Right. Yeah, it's funny. I'm in Virginia, so the Caps are my, you know, like my local home team, basically. And I remember those. I remember those, all those series back in the before the Cup in 18. All the you know, the storylines, like you said, the Caps had some great regular season teams, and then they'd get to the playoffs and find ways to, you know, lose. But yeah, like you said, Bobrovsky turned it around. I'm a Columbus fan, and we'll get to that in a second. But I remember the Bobrovsky. You know, there was that narrative about maybe he needs a sports psychiatrist, and then he goes to Florida, and now he's now when you think of Bobrovsky, you think Hall of Fame, you think two Stanley Cups.
Maybe the psychiatrist, maybe what the sports psychologist was vitamin D. Who knows?
Who knows? I mean, you know, it also just kind of makes me think, like, you don't typically see these big, especially goalies, sign these big free agent contracts and it works out. That's definitely worked out in Florida, and it didn't look great initially, the way things were kind of, even though Florida's been a really good team even before they finally won the cup. Obviously, you know, they I think they won the President's Trophy, didn't they, like 3 years ago, and Tampa Bay knocked them out, and then they were the 8th seed and upset the Bruins. And it's kind of funny how the Panthers have essentially just destroyed the Bruins from the inside out, as far as knocking them down as a 1 seed, getting Brad Marchand from them. Now they're the big bad, you know. Though it's funny how fast things have changed between teams like the Bruins and the Panthers. Yeah, I mean, it just takes one playoff run to just kind of change the whole narrative around.
Exactly. And in their case, 3 straight years, right? Like,
yeah,
it's pretty remarkable. The state of Florida has had quite a run, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I always like to ask this question. Now, I'm not trying to, it's not fair to compare the Lightning's run and the Panthers, because of two great teams, two great, you know, organizations. They both have done tremendous things as far as winning the cup back to back and everything like that. Tampa Bay had their own unique challenges, of course, with COVID, the bubble, just different random stuff they couldn't even control, and they won, you know, credit to them. Do you look at Florida's run, I guess, do you ever think, like, wow, that run is even more amazing? Or even forget Tampa, just in general, you look back at teams that have repeated, you know, Pittsburgh a while back, Detroit before them. Are you more impressed with what Florida's been doing, or is it kind of like prisoner of the moment and you have to kind of look back and think, like, situations are different, each team that's done this type of run is, it's impressive in its own right?
I mean, it is impressive in its own right, and I think that we would, a little recency bias in saying, you know, comparing one to the other, like what Tampa did. I mean, they did the majority of that in COVID impacted years, and I actually don't deduct points from that. I think that it presented its own challenges, honestly, like to have to play in a bubble with no fans. And I think that we should never, I know that people might tend to put an asterisk beside the Tampa Bay Lightning Cups, but I certainly don't. I think we'll look back on it as a surreal experience, certainly. But I think that what they accomplished was pretty remarkable as well. And by the way, they also had a pretty hefty third line too, right? With Goudreau and who else was on that line? But they had great depth on that team as well. And again, that goes back to, you know, what wins you cups, and the Panthers have that too. So yeah, I'd say, look, it's pretty remarkable. I think if the Panthers make the cup for a 4th straight year, like, that's going to be unbelievable. Like, when's the last time a team has won 3 straight cups, right? Like, has it even been, my goodness, I don't need, is it the Islanders?
I was about to say the Islanders, yeah.
Is it the Islanders? Like, the Oilers had 2-2,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So was there even a team that did 3 in a row? I don't think so, since the Penguins did 2 in a row. Yeah, so I mean,
it's crazy.
That would be remarkable.
Yeah. And I agree with the Lightning as far as, like you said, their own unique, you know, the challenges that they, unique challenges, of course, to put it, you know, I mean, like, what they were able to do, forget, like, the fact, like you said, no fans, the bubble, just really crazy circumstances there, too. So what they were able to do, and I had them going 3 in a row against the Avalanche a couple years ago, and of course Colorado finally was able to get it done. Also, I saw this Twitter clip, actually it was yesterday, doing a little bit of research, and I came across this Twitter clip of when you were talking with Clinton Yates, and I'm kind of paraphrasing, but, and I agreed with you for the record, but kind of like the whole, like, Canada, you know, they want to win the country, trying to get the Stanley Cup back, and like you said, why would the Maple Leafs or any other team in Canada root for the Oilers, of course, to win the Stanley Cup? And I'm thinking, like, yeah, if, you know, the fan base wants their team to be the one that brings the cup back to Canada, it's not like, okay, my team's out, I'm going to root for our country at that point to win the Stanley Cup. But I thought that was a good point. I'm like, yeah, why would, you know, why would Leafs fans root for the Canadiens fans if it was the Canadiens if that was a circumstance, you know? Like,
never.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen. not at the club level. Like,
yeah.
The point I was trying to make there, and this is a conversation that happens every single year in Canadian sports media, and I understand the genesis of it because I was born and raised in Canada, so I understand the sentiment. This also has to do with like Canadians and their relationship with the United States, and often feeling this sort of little brother, little sibling syndrome and inferiority complex in terms of like population and whatever, right? And hockey is also the number one concern in Canada. It's very much the way the NFL and football, college football, et cetera, football is in America, right? It's the number one sport, the most popular sport in Canada. So Canadians also have a very big sense of pride, particularly when Canadians make it in the United States. They love to celebrate actors or broadcasters or anyone, scientists, whatever, whoever, you know, makes it on a global stage, certainly in the United States, that's celebrated in Canada, as it should be. Like, they should be very proud of Canadians that do good things, big things, great things, wonderful things in the world. Going back to hockey, though, like, just thinking of everything I said there and applying it to hockey, the fact that a Canadian team is not one since 1993, certainly there is a little bit of, oh, if it's not my team, I would rather it be a Canadian team than an American team. I get where the sentiment is going. To me, it feels a little misguided and sort of breaks the rules of sports in terms of supporting a club team. There's no real, like, patriotism doesn't get attached to a team, you know? Like,
yep.
It, to me, it's like if the Toronto Maple Leafs are in the Stanley Cup final, the only Canadians that will be cheering for the Toronto Maple Leafs are Leafs fans. Every other fan base would not want to see the Toronto Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup. And so I just find it amusing that there are people that are like, no, I'm going to cheer for this team now, even though my team is out. It just doesn't, it's not a, it, there should be no patriotic, you know, I'd rather it be a Canadian. There's the patriotism should lie with the national team, with Team Canada or Team USA, et cetera. Like, if the roles were reversed and if American team hadn't won since 1993 and, I don't know, the Minnesota Wild are in the Stanley Cup, is all of America banding together and all American hockey fans saying, we need Minnesota to win this cup for America. Do it for America. Like, if you're going to be patriotic about it, then you should have supported every single year which team has the more Canadian players or Canadian staff. Like, that to me seems more patriotic than cheering for the city.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's why I'm thinking, I don't know if the fans of whatever Canadian market is either indifferent or if they're just like, well, of course they're going to say, or would I would think they would want to think like, yeah, I want it to be my team that eventually brings the cup back if it happens.
Exactly. You
know,
should want it to be your team. Yeah. if you're an Ottawa Senators fan, you should not want any other Canadian team to break the drought in Canada other than the Ottawa Senators. You want your team to have that accolade. You don't want another team to have that accolade in Canada.
Exactly. So maybe they are rooting for the team from the U.S. at that point. But no, I totally agree. I did want to ask you if you can say, how is Barry Melrose doing? Have you been able to speak with him recently?
I haven't spoken to him in a little bit. I do send him text messages. I know that him and his wife, Cindy, are living outside of Florida now. Obviously, health concerns. He talked about Parkinson's and Barry Melrose means a lot to me. He's very much, he was the first person in the NHL and the ESPN department, the first on-air talent that I worked with, but also the first one to really open his arms to me, welcome me with open arms, I should say, and kind of take me under his wing. And he didn't really need to do that. He was an institution by that point. He carried the torch for hockey in America for a very, very long time. And I miss him a lot. I wish I had an opportunity to see him more because we had a lot of great memories on and off camera. And yeah, Barry will always, you know, hold a very, very special place in my heart. I know that My colleagues, John Butchergrass and Steve Levy, are very close to him. I've worked with him for decades. They put out a, Bucci put out a tweet about how he believes that, or Barry Melrose and Don Cherry, people of that ilk, should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. And I agree. Like, I really hope I see the day that we see Barry Melrose in the Hockey Hall of Fame. I think that he's done enough as a broadcaster, as a builder, as a megaphone for the game, that he certainly deserves that accolade. So yeah, he will forever be important to me. And the funniest, I have two funny Barry Melrose stories that I'll happily share. Both of them happen off camera. Sometimes when we were doing In the Crease together, we'd be waiting until like 3 or 4 AM to do the show. And it, you know, you sit there in the green room and you kind of get the giggles and kind of go delirious a little bit, right? Waiting for the studio. So, I remember one time it was around football season and we walked into the green room and Boomer was there. And so Boomer and Barry would get along very famously. And I don't know how Chris Berman remembers this, but like I sat there for the next half an hour as they were rhyming off every player from the 1968 Montreal Canadiens roster. And I'm just like, what is life right now? Like Barry Melrose and Chris Berman are going back and forth like it's a game. And I'm like, Boomer, how do you even know this? Like, why is this in your memory? This is amazing. And he's like, I would listen to broadcasts from Long Island. We would get Habs radio broadcasts, which is amazing. So that was one. And another one that was really funny was when we were sitting in the same green room, but it's just the two of us. Barry turned to me once and he goes, he goes, hey, name a NHL player from Saskatchewan. And I'm like, what? He's like, give me a hockey player. Name a hockey player from Saskatchewan. I'll tell you what town they're from. And I'm like, okay, challenge accepted. So I pulled up like Quant Hockey and I have like the list. And I'm like, I don't know, I just name whoever. I get to Joey Kosher and he's like, Calvington, obviously. And he goes, yeah, Calvington, honestly. But then he goes, by the way, you know, I'm on the sign, right? And I'm like, of course you're on the sign, Barry. But he did it. Like, he didn't miss a beat. Like, yeah, he just knew where everyone was from. It was just really, really funny that he would know this, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Typical Barry, man. What a guy. What
yeah.
A
Elvis, I remember, I mean, like, it goes back. I mean, I'll be 37 here in a couple months. And I remember watching, like, back when the NHL was on ABC back in, like, 03. And I just remember it was, like, John Saunders, Barry Melrose. Like, I always just remember John watching Saunders, Melrose. Man. Yeah, both of them. Like, and of course, like, just the original, like Gary Thorne and Bill Clement, John Davidson, all those guys back then. So it's been kind of, you know, like, nostalgic to have the NHL back on ESPN, ABC. You know, some of the same personalities back then, part of it still. So, but yeah, it was cool. Like, Barry Melrose was always awesome on TV, watching SportsCenter. Even back before the NHL was back on ESPN, it was cool when he was on TV to be able to talk hockey for just the, even if it was like a few minutes, it seemed like, just to have it, just to have him back on TV. So yeah, I wish he could still be on TV, but hopefully he's doing, you know, as well as he can be right now.
Yeah, same. I miss him.
Going back to McDavid, you kind of made me think about this question, and it's actually crazy that I'm about to ask it, I think, just based on, I'm going to ask you. So obviously Ovechkin is the new all-time goal. He has the all-time goals record, but do you think someone can pass Ovechkin's goals mark one day? Could it be McDavid, or do you think that record will stand? I mean, I think it's going to stand for a bit, obviously. It's going to be a while before anyone ever could get close, but Gretzky is broke, so do you think Ovechkin's mark could break?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, for a while, I thought Austin Matthews could do it. I mean, I think that he was still on pace to, like, a further pace than Ovechkin was. The problem is that, like, in career games, I mean, but the problem is that he, like, the secret sauce to Ovechkin breaking the record was he stayed healthy in his career. Like, that's the big thing, is you would need somebody to have the goal-scoring acumen of an Ovechkin and Austin Matthews, but also the longevity and the lack of missing time. And remember, Ovechkin also missed time due to COVID and due to a lockout and, like, a lot of these things that were out of his control, you know? So, like, imagine somebody with the goal-scoring prowess, talent of Ovechkin or Austin Matthews with a completely clear runway, so no work disruptions, no external factors, and just clear, like every year is an 82, 84 game season, whatever it becomes, right? And they just have that those games to be able to play, and they get their 40, 50, 60 goals a season, right? Like, I could see somebody doing that. Like, I for a while, you wondered if Austin Matthews could be on that trajectory, but you wonder his the longevity, the injuries that, you know, like how likely is that? Could he stay healthy for that period of time to hover around the record, you know? So do I think it could happen? Yes, but also because it recently just happened. But I also think that Ovechkin proved that there is a formula to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder if it could be a McDavid or whoever, you know, whoever one day. The way Ovechkin did it, and he had a broken leg earlier this past season.
Right.
And then last year, or I guess going on two seasons ago now, he got off to kind of had a weird season for his standards, seemed to be struggling, kind of made me wonder if he's actually going to be able to do it. And then this year he turns back the clock and it's like nothing changed really.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I wonder, we don't know if this is his last season in the NHL. Obviously, there's speculation about that. We don't know anything concrete, but, you know, like it's not out of the realm of possibility if he goes a few more years for him to get to 1,000 goals. Like, it's entirely possible if he stays in the NHL or if he continues to play.
That's true. If he does, let's say he gets to 1,000 goals, that's true. I'm thinking about just the 890. What's he at? 895. I'm just thinking that, Mark. That's true. He has a chance to extend it out even that much more. So we'll see how that goes. I know the Stanley Cup final, of course, was on TNT, but were you at the final, whether with ESPN or just there as media or...
No, I was actually in Bristol. I hosted two shows. So I had we had our digital show with Greg Wyshynski, The Drop. So we did a post-game show after every game. And we also did a pre-game show for international markets called Inside the Rink. And that filmed in Bristol. So it was me and Blake Bolden. We did that before every cup final game because internationally, ESPN airs the cup final. So... we did like a pre, it was almost like an episode of The Point that was a half hour, like a pregame show that led into the cup final.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, I wasn't sure if you were able to be at the on site at the final or just doing shows, but from, like you said, from Bristol. So that makes sense. Now, I don't know if you would remember this, but we did meet briefly in Columbus, Ohio for the Stadium Series game. I was with Mark Scheig. We were at the, it was Saturday morning. It was the, like, Stanley Cup, or what do they call it? It was the like the NHL media experience, like the fan experience. And sure. So I was with Mark, and we were just kind of killing time. And I guess you guys probably had met before, knew each other, because you guys started chatting for a second, and then you shook my hand. And then it was funny because me and Mark were walking away, and I just didn't realize it, you know, in that moment. But I was like, oh, who was that? And it was like Arta Okal, and I'm like, oh, I know who that is from ESPN. But yeah, I was just curious to get your thoughts, of course, on the Stadium Series in Columbus. I'm sure you've been to Columbus prior to that time, right?
Yeah, no, I've been to Columbus many times. I thought they did a terrific job. The thing with that, I remember seeing Mark, and he was with somebody who now I know is you. I was mid-stream, so we were like either about to go on or on ESPN TikTok live. So I wanted to say hi really quick, so I wasn't really registering who he was with. Mm-hmm. So sorry, Will.
No, all good.
Didn't register necessarily that moment, but... that's why, because we were either about to, and I was with Nasher too, is like a
that's right,
awesome. He's one of my favorite people in hockey. He's a hockey content creator. He's the best. Him and I did the NHL Gaming World Championship together back in the day. So he's a Columbus native, so it was cool to chop it up with him and go around the NHL, like you said, the fan zone. The cup was there, so it was a blast. I thought that Ohio Stadium looked fantastic. I thought that the game was a lot of fun. The atmosphere was electric. Over 90,000 people there. I thought it was a massive, massive win. It was just freezing cold, but other than that, it was a massive win for hockey. I mean, this season overall, like Columbus Stadium Series was awesome. Four Nations was incredible. Ovechkin's great chase. Like, there were a lot of great highlights and high moments for hockey this year.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the Four Nations was fantastic. I mean, I was thinking, oh, that'll be cool. I'll watch that. And then I was so captivated by I wanted, of course, to see the U.S. finally pull it off. And, of course, you think of the three fights against Canada in 9 seconds. And, yeah, what do you think about the Four Nations? I mean, that was – did it blow of your expectations or, you know, out of the water? Was it just even that 10 times even more than you thought it would be?
Yeah, I expected it to be intense.
Yeah.
I just knew those players would take it very seriously. A lot of people were calling it, oh, it's just an exhibition. It's a warm up. Sure, maybe under some lens, but the player, like, we had been waiting for this level of competition for a very long time. And I'm glad it happened the way it did, because if the Olympics were the first time that we saw international competition after a 10-year layoff or however long it was, we wouldn't have gotten three fights in 9 seconds. Those players would have been ejected immediately. So I'm glad that it happened, you know, sort of in an NHL event. And I'm happy with the cadence that we're going to see moving forward. I like having a Olympic year off, World Cup of Hockey off. I love international competition, so I'm good with that. In fact, I would be good with the All-Star game being revamped to a one game Canada versus USA showcase. I'd be fine with that too. Have them do a skills competition on Saturday and then do a Canada versus USA game on Sunday. And then the winner gets a North American championship trophy or belt or something like that. Like, I would be perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, it was just so awesome. Obviously, even the casual fans were, you know, immersed with that whole entire, what was it, 2-week event. And then going back to getting into Columbus real fast, you said it was so cold. I had a ticket to that game because I didn't know if I was going to be there as media or what. And I had a ticket because I was going to be there no matter what. I hadn't been in Columbus in 20 years since before that game. So I was going to be back either way. But I am glad I was in the press box because, like you said, it was so cold, the wind. I went back to watch on YouTube earlier today. I was just going back and watching. It was kind of the post game with you and Greg. I went back to watch that, and I think Greg had said, or maybe it was you, I don't know, it was like the loss or whatever was the wind, because it was that much colder with that wind. It was like 20 degrees, and then you factor in the wind. I don't know how all the fans that were out there did it, but I was just definitely glad to be in the press box. But yeah, it was a great experience, great atmosphere. Really cool for Columbus to finally have that kind of stage. And then, like, sure. Yeah, the Blue Jackets, of course, obviously we know what happened going into the season.
Yeah.
Zero expectations for, you know, we knew with rebuild-wise where they were, and, of course, just kind of exceeding expectations. What do you think about the Jackets, you know, going into the next season, kind of trying to build off of that this past season?
I love their release video, by the way. They was hilarious with the Jackass theme. It was great. I think that high optimism. I think that they're making good moves in the offseason. I think that this is going to be a playoff-bound team. I think that this is going to be a team that is looking to compete very soon. And there are a lot of passionate hockey people in and out of that organization. I love their front office. I think that big things are to come for the city of Columbus. And quite honestly, Stadium Series was a very much like for this generation a coming out party for them, for this generation. I think that marked like a new era of Blue Jackets hockey and the paradigm of the Blue Jackets in the NHL. I think that their stock will rise from here.
Yeah, I like Dean. I like what, you know, Dean and Don, just what the players were able to, you know, you, like some of the additions, like Sean Monahan, obviously seeing guys like Fantilli and Marchenko really accelerate or you know, you saw their game kind of take new levels this past season. So I am excited too. I think a lot of people in Columbus are just kind of curious about the goaltending situation with Jet. I like Jet a lot. Jet Greaves with what he was able to show in limited capacity. And then, of course, like the Elvis dynamic of, you know, are they going to be able to get a little bit more out of him or what's going to kind of play out there? But yeah, I think it should be a fun season no matter, you know, how everything kind of shakes out between now, the rest of this offseason, and the season ahead. But it should be a fun season. Hopefully the Jackets can, you know, get back into the playoff picture.
Definitely.
I'm going to ask you one more thing. I came across this question, so I have to, or I came across this on your website, so I have to ask you, but why did Cuba Gooding Jr. want your socks?
I think it was Thanksgiving socks. I think that's what it was. It was a Thanksgiving edition of the MSG Hockey Show that I hosted with Will Reeve and Anson Carter, and Cuba Gooding Jr. came on as a guest. And he saw my socks, and they were, I think they were themed for Thanksgiving. I think it was like turkey and drumsticks on it or whatever. And then he just kept mentioning them and just wanted them. I almost took them off and gave them to him. I thought it'd be too gross for TV. I should have done it. It would have made good TV.
Yeah. What was the dynamic? You'd mentioned Alan Thicke. Was that the same thing or was that different situations?
No, that was years ago.
Yeah.
He was a great interview. He was terrific. I remember he was from Kirkland Lake, and Kirkland Lake has like this disproportionate amount of NHL players that have come from there versus the population. So he was very proud of that. And yeah, it was great to talk to him. He put me in a headlock at the end of the interview, which was hilarious.
Yeah. I was also really impressed to learn that you have a degree in mathematics.
Yeah.
Did you just like numbers or?
Yeah, I don't know. I just like math. Like I mean, look, at the by third year of university, I was like, I'm never going to get a job in this. Like, this is way too tough.
Yeah.
I admire people that can do this for a living, and I just like barely scraped by. And by the end of it, I was like, I'm never going to be able to apply this. Like, this is just way beyond me. So the fact that I finished the degree is, you know, the win for me anyway. So
yeah, for sure.
That was very much more, honestly, like when I look back on it now, that was very much like my parents, my father specifically. He was an immigrant. He worked very hard. You know, he was the very much like, oh, you don't want to be a doctor? Go ahead and be a lawyer. Like that kind of father, you know?
Yeah.
So in that, like he was the one that was like more proud of doing that than I was in a way, you know, like I probably did it to earn my father's respect or you know, the pat on the back, you know, kind of thing. But that's probably where the motivation came from. I'm glad I did it, don't get me wrong. Like, I love the school.
Yeah,
I thought
sure.
It was really fun to do. You know, I'm glad I got the degree. It feels like a badge of honor in a way now, but like if I was able to choose anything at that time, maybe I would have chosen something different or followed my passions sooner. But looking back on it now, I'm pretty happy with how things, you know, unfolded even at the time.
I was just impressed to see that because I'm thinking like, you must be really good at math because math is, you know,
yeah.
I could never have done it. But and then I saw that you're a dual official video game world record holder, right? In NHL PA 93.
More proud of that.
That's
more proud
awesome.
Of that. That they can never take away from me, okay? That I will happily boast about. That was kind of, I'll be honest, it was kind of a promotional stunt. I happened to call the NHL 94 World Championships, and I became very good friends with the best NHL 94 player in the world. His name is King Raff. He also lives in New York. And so we became buddies, and I said, hey, I'm looking through all of these NHL records. We should break some of these records and just make content out of it. And he was like, absolutely. So we just recorded ourselves doing these tag team records, you know, where like some of them were definitely, oh, I'm showing up on the last hour of the group project and still getting an A, you know, like. That's how it felt in some of those. But like, I contributed to a couple of them. Like, there was one group one in NHL 95 where we had like the most lopsided victory and there were four of us playing. You know, we were that was definitely one where I contributed probably the most. But some of them, especially with Raf, it was like, oh, the score is like 67-1. And like, I scored maybe 12 of those goals, you know?
12.
But listen, I'm still there. Like, I may not have played the whole season. I may have been a fourth line scrub, but I still got a cup ring. Let's put it that way.
Is it like a Guinness World Record or like where?
Yeah, it's more like, yeah, it was called Twin Galaxies. It was like one of the accepted record keepers for video games. So in terms of prestige or value in the video game space at the time, it carried as much weight. The Guinness World Records, that's for many categories across many things, right? So they do have video game records, but that one is a little bit tougher to crack, like to get to them to submit. So Twin Galaxies was a little bit of a simpler process to submit, which is why I tried Guinness. It wasn't because we didn't have the record. It was just trying to submit it was a little bit challenging. So I stopped it. I could have probably pursued it more, but I was just like, I'm good with Twin Gal. I'm good with, this makes me an official world record holder. I'm good with that. I'm going to run with it. I'm going to put it on my LinkedIn, my bio. I'm good.
Exactly. You know? Oh, no, exactly. And so, yeah, that's what I was getting at. I mean, you're immortalized where it matters in that space. It wasn't like one day, right? Or was it like many weeks? Or what was the time span on that?
Oh, we broke the records like on the first day we tried them. Like we did several of them.
Okay.
And we did them usually on the first day. Like I would try to do them on tournament weekends, so everyone was already there, you know? So a lot of us would be trying to break the records. And so it felt like some of them felt like an accomplishment because we were also like competing against each other, you know?
Yeah.
So I would say like it wasn't every time, oh, we did it on the first try, but it was pretty close for many of them anyway.
Yeah, no, a friend and I in college we were attempting some video game type records as well. And on the second attempt, I kind of bowed out early. He actually technically could have broken like the suit. It was like Mario games. He was doing like certain records that he was trying to beat. He technically did it, but it didn't count because we didn't have like the adjudicator or like the official way for Guinness to, like you were kind of alluding to. So that's why I was like, I got to bring that up because we were trying to do our own kind of records back in 2013 or whatever, but we made it like a charity thing. So we, you know, raised money and stuff. But anyway, Arda, it's been great to chat with you and pick your brain about hockey and all kinds of stuff. Thanks for taking the time to do that.
Absolutely, Will. Thanks for having me. And good vibes.
Three, two, one,
zero,
zero, and liftoff.